Hi, Diane.
Hi.
This is oh, go ahead, say hi. I'm so sorry. I'm a little nervous today.
Hi. It's nice to be here today.
I'm so glad that you're here. You know, at Angel Coaches, usually we chit chat with people, and we've had some great speakers on in the past, and tonight I'm super excited because this lady that I'm going to introduce tonight is an author, a spiritual counselor, and a motivational speaker. And I know that you've got a great and an inspiring story, Diane. I know that there's been some ups and downs that got you here. And so why don't you share with people how you became an author and how you're at the place that you're at now. Share a little bit of your story. And I'll ask some questions.
Well, I will start back when my youngest child was born. Mikey was born in 1983. And when he was 3 years old, we got him diagnosed with mild autism. And we began the journey with him of trying to help him learn how to fit in with the norm. By the time he was 7, he got re-diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, which was a new label at the time. So he was very high-functioning autistic, but he definitely struggled with all of that pervasive developmental disorder difficulties and struggles through his life. I was the president of the Colorado Autism Society when he was younger, and we used to put out a bi-monthly newsletter. And many times I was running short of material to put in there, so I would put a short, funny story about Mikey, about something he was doing that all the other parents could relate to and laugh at, and I would put these little stories on the back of the newsletter. So I started having all these people saying, you got to put these in a book. You got to write a book about this, because there's nothing, or there wasn't anything at the time in the way of humor on the bookshelves in the 80s for autism. I mean, any kind of a humorous parenting book was going to be by someone who had normal, and I hate that word, but quote, normal children. So right. I started collecting these stories and finally accumulated a book's worth by the time he was an adult, and he was very successful. He graduated from high school as the most inspirational student, and he went to gunsmithing school, which we did not even tell them that he had a disability because we were afraid that that would disclude him. So he got his associate's degree in gunsmithing. He was very talented, very, very talented artist. He was great with the woodworking and the metal smithing. He made jewelry. He made pottery. And he really found his niche. So we moved to Oklahoma, where he was going to at some point inherit my grandparents' farm, and that was the life that he absolutely loved. But he got a job as a gunsmith in Oklahoma City, and he lived part-time with me in Oklahoma City when he went to his gunsmithing job, and then he went to the farm on his days off. So he had a beautiful life. He loved his life, and he told me how happy he was all the time, and he reached this success peak that we never thought he'd be at. He got a girlfriend, he got his driver's license, and he was proud of himself for the first time in his life. And then he killed himself. And that was absolutely shocking to all of us. He walked into a Walmart store in Shakota, Oklahoma, where he had worked when we first moved down there, and he shot himself. And it pulled the rug out from under me, obviously. I had this, child that I had worked so hard with for 25 years to get to normal, to get this place in life where he was happy and content, and he was. And he told us that all the time. And all of a sudden, he kills himself. Well, he did leave a suicide note, and when they finally released it that night to me, and I started reading it, I realized he was not in his right mind. He had more like a schizophrenic episode where he was having delusions. So it completely took the wind out of my sails. I felt like I worked so hard to help my son achieve this life, and he's taken away from me. But I felt it was his time to go, and that's my own personal belief. I don't think God takes anyone out of their life unless it's their time to go. God could have made that trigger jam. He could have made that bullet misfire. God could have done anything, excuse me, to stop that, but he didn't. And I believed Mikey was, it was his time on earth was up, but I was, struggling struggling with the absence of Mikey in my life. And right after he died, all these weird things started happening. And at first you think, oh, I'm grieving, I'm looking for signs of my dead son. But they started compounding, and they were happening to all of us. And other people saw weird things happening. You know, the heater would come on at my store right before I got there because I was always cold. And the front door would fly open right before I was ready to walk in the door. I mean, people at my store where I manage saw things happening there. My family all had things happening. You know, the radio would shut off by itself or shut back, you know, turn on. The television would change channels by itself, and it would be a program that Mikey liked to watch. So we had all these things that kept piling up. And at some point, you finally start saying, you know, I feel more stupid trying to justify, you know, find a rational explanation for these things. And I knew it was Mikey. Mikey was trying to show us that he was still around. And that was the greatest comfort to us, to all of us, that we could have found. And I had a channeling session with a psychic who I've known for years, and he really came through in the channeling session and really answered a lot of my questions. So I've come to terms with his death. I think I did that much quicker than most people do. And I pulled the book out of the cobwebs and said, you know what, I'm going to add on to this book. And it's not just Mikey's life anymore. It's his life and his death and his life after death. So it's not a sob story. It's definitely very sad, you know. You don't want Mikey to die, but we know he's going to die in the story because it's not a story. It's his life. But you see, aww, Mikey's spirit's still very much alive. And I really wanted to help other people. I had originally written this book to help other people with kids who have autism or Asperger's or just any kid who doesn't fit the norm, because we have things to laugh at, too, just like every other parent does. And I wanted, you know, Misery Loves Company, I wanted that feeling of camaraderie with other parents, that they're not alone. But then after his passing, I also felt like Mikey wanted me to get that message out there that there is life after death. I felt like that was something that was very important to him, not just the whole autism Asperger's thing, but that there is life after death. And I felt an obligation to do that. So I got it in my head. I was going to get this book out there, and this kind of falls into what you're always telling people about manifesting what you want. You've got to believe it's going to happen for you, and it happened within a year for me that I got Mikey's book published. So it's called The Return of Mikey, and wow, it's available through the website or through Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and it's just Mikey's story.
Well, I got a couple questions to ask, and I know there's people that are listening that you know, have ideas. Thank you for sharing that with us. And there's also people that, I ask you if I could ask you, if I could talk to you about this a little earlier. People have definite ideas about suicide, right? If you commit suicide, then you're going to be stuck here. If you commit suicide, you're going to a different place than where you'd like to be, you know, all those kind of things. And you said that Mikey killing himself or committing suicide was the way it was supposed to be for him in this lifetime. Is that what you feel?
I feel that he was supposed to leave us at that age. I actually feel that he was supposed to go in a car accident, because I was dating a man at the time who also had clairvoyant abilities, and he had seen Mikey getting in a fatal car accident, although he didn't tell me at the time it would be fatal. He kept warning me to tell Mikey not to make a left-hand turn out of the place that he worked at, because he kept seeing Mikey get in a bad car accident. He didn't want to tell me it was fatal. So, of course, I told Mikey, don't make a left-hand turn, and he stopped. He stopped turning left, and he started turning right and making a U-turn down where it was more safe. I believe that was probably how God had decided to take him out, but we interfered with that. We interfered with that plan, and God chose a different way. So I don't think it was predetermined that he was going to kill himself. I think it was predetermined that he was going to die then, And God had to find another way around our interference.
That's a good point, that it was in his soul's plan he was supposed to leave at the age of 25, because we plan everything that we experience before we get here, and you and I'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But my producer said in certain cultures that suicide, to die by suicide, is an honor, and in some, you know, in ancient cultures, and in some cultures it still is. Just a little side note. It's pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
We saw that on
9/11,
unfortunately.
Yeah, right. So, Mikey, you said you've gotten signs that Mikey's still there. And have you had dreams or anything like that?
He's come to me twice. I've seen him in dreams twice where I did not feel like it was a dream. I felt like it was more of a visit. Because I dream about him frequently. Most of my dreams are when he was young. I dream about him and his sister when they were young. But I had, several months after he passed, I had a dream that he was playing a joke on me in the kitchen. And it was typical Mikey, but it was so real. I knew I had seen him. So I felt like that was a visit. But a lot of times I've just had dreams of him being a little kid, you know, bouncing around like he used to do.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
He was always action.
I like that. And I know that you have found, I think that you found a piece of silver, you told me too, that, because he was a gunsmith, but he also made jewelry and everything. When did you find that? Was that before or after his death? You told me about that too,
it,
as well.
Like, after his death, we actually found several. The first thing we found, my stepfather found it, was a cross that he had fashioned out of an old antique pair of spectacles. And none of us had ever seen it, but it was obviously Mikey's handiwork. You could tell Mikey's silversmithing. And he found that, I believe it was like a week and a half after, it may have been actually the week of his death. I'd actually have to look back in my own book to find out the exact date, because we started writing all of those things down. But we found a cross first. And one of the things that really made my day on Mother's Day, the first Mother's Day I had after his death, was just a horrible, you know, horrible day. I was dreading it. You just dread all the firsts. That first year is terrible, going through the first Christmas without him, first Thanksgiving. So I had the first Mother's Day without him. And the day before Mother's Day, I just had a pit in my stomach. I found a pendant that he had made with an eagle on it. And it was out of bronze. And I called my mom, and I was so excited. I said, I found this bronze pendant. And I'm telling everybody, you know, about this pendant that I found. And I went to work, and I worked with a woman who was American Indian. And she said, well, in our culture, an eagle is the sign of a great leader passing. And I really felt like Mikey had given me a Mother's Day gift. And she said, you know, you really ought to put it on like a leather cord or something, because it's more rustic looking. So I tell my mom this, and she said, you'll never believe what I found in his stuff yesterday, because he had a lot of stuff at the farm. She said, I found a little cardboard, you know, container with some black leather cording on it. I don't know what he bought it for, but it would be perfect. And sure enough, it is it's necklace material. So it was like a Mother's Day gift from Mikey. So that was another piece we found. We also found, I found two more pendants after that, and they always hit around a birthday or some kind of a holiday where I felt like I was getting a gift from him. And then we found numerous crosses that he did not make that were just store-bought, a necklace that I hadn't seen for 20 years that I thought I'd lost. I came home from a vacation, and it was sitting on my end table where I know it had not been before, and nobody else had been there. So we had a lot of things like that just turn up where you have no way of, how did it get there? There's no explanation. You know there was nobody else who could have put this there. And then that's what I mean. When you keep having those things adding up, you finally have to start accepting, you know what, this is coming from outside of this physical world. You know, somebody else is making these things appear, because you just don't have that many coincidences.
That is so true, and I appreciate you sharing those stories, because I know you and I have talked about this. There are people that wonder what happens after you die, and where you go. And I believe, and I think that you're on the same path as me, or the same belief as that I am, that we all go to a really cool place. And we learn what are, you know, did we achieve all that we're supposed to achieve, and go through our life's work. And I think you thought Mikey, he was supposed to leave at 25. So he goes over on the other side and figured out what he was supposed to do and how much he learned and what he was, and did he achieve what he was supposed to achieve? Do you feel like he did? Do you feel like he achieved what
Yes, I feel like one of his soul's purposes, his main soul's purpose, was to teach us about faith. And he did that all his life, but he actually did that more through his death than he did through his life. I felt like he was my greatest teacher in my entire life of something that I struggled to learn since I was young, which is acceptance. And especially women. Women have a very difficult time with acceptance. We want to fix everything. We just don't accept. We don't accept. We can't fix. And I had to learn acceptance when he was 3 years old because I couldn't fix autism. You know, there was nothing I could do to make that go away. I could do everything in my power to help him learn how to live a normal life, but I couldn't fix that. And I feel like he really came here to be a great teacher to all of us, but especially to me. And it's funny because as a mother, you always feel like you're the teacher. But I realized after his death that he was my teacher.
Wow, 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 wow. That's quite a statement there, girl, you just made. Let me ask you a question. And his soul's purpose was to teach you and to teach mm-hmm. people and that kind of thing. When you first found out that he was autistic in Asperger's, was it hard to accept? Did you feel like that you had been given not what you asked for? Did you feel like you go, how am I going to handle this? You know what I mean? What did you feel?
Certainly. When you, and parents, and I do get asked this frequently, wasn't it horrifying, you know, when you first heard that word? Unfortunately, by the time you hear that label, you're ready to hear it. You've been to every doctor in town saying there's something wrong with my child, and they can't tell you what it is. And, you know, to Mikey's, you know, service, it's because he was mildly autistic, or they certainly would have been able to see what the problem was right away. But you start feeling like this hypochondriac mother, because that's the way you're being treated a lot by doctors. You know, they're saying there's nothing wrong with them, and they tell you to go on your way. And so by the time you finally reach that doctor's office and finally someone puts their finger on it, you are ready to hear some kind of a diagnosis. But autism at the time was like a death sentence. It was to me as bad as a mental retardation label would have been, because there was not as much known about it back then. When you heard someone had autism, it was almost like this immediate picture you got in your head of this person has to go into an institutionalized setting. And that is kind of the attitude a lot of people had. A lot of people had never heard of it, didn't know what it was. And so it was horrifying. It was not what I wanted to hear, but yet I felt finally like, okay, now I can work with this now. Now that I know what it is, I can work with this, because we had no idea. I kept thinking he had a hearing problem because he didn't respond to our voices. But yet when I would take him to the ear, nose, and throat doctor for hearing tests, he had acute hearing. He heard like a dog hears. So it obviously wasn't a hearing problem, and it was very difficult to finally, you know, get to a person who could tell us what was wrong with him. But by that time, it was, you know, I was ready to hear something. It's not like when your child has a headache and you take them to the emergency room and find out they have a brain tumor. And, you know, it's not like that, you know, 1 second you have a normal child and the next minute you have a child with a problem. So that is the unfortunate thing with autism, you know, but maybe it's fortunate as far as it being less of a shock.
I like that. You know, I was reading in a book, and I think you read the same book because I recommended it to you. And your first choice, I know, was Mikey's book. Second choice was this book. But it's all about soul planning, right? And the third choice is the your books that are – we'll talk about that a little bit later about that are coming out. The soul planning book. And I think it says that parents and kids – we choose everything we experience in this life, but kids who choose autism or Asperger's, you know, a lot of times these are these highly evolved souls that are here to really, really learn and, you know, have led these in the past lives. They've led a life where they've had to be out in front of people and be great world leaders. In this lifetime, a lot of times they will choose to choose this life so that they can go inside and be more internal. And the parents that choose to take care of these, or the souls that choose to take care of these kids, are highly evolved souls too. Do you feel like that? I mean, you work with a lot of parents,
and
you yourself.
And I always used to make fun of the you know, figures of speech. People always tell you, you know, God only gives special children to special people, and you know, there's all these special places in heaven, and you know, I would make fun of them because I would always say I'm just not that special, you know. God has a sense of humor here, but I do feel that you have to be more of an evolved soul. And it's not that everybody else is not going to get there or they're already beyond that, but you have to have a level of wisdom to be able to be a good parent for a child like that, because you can't worry about what other people think. You have to see the true value in a soul and not how their behavior is. You know, you've got to be able to love unconditionally. You can't love, you know, because, oh, my son is a star quarterback or my, you know, daughter made straight A's. You have to really have unconditional love, and you have to see the true essence of the person. And I always could see Mikey was golden. His heart was golden. He was just true. He was a true, genuine heart of gold. And I always could see that, no matter how horrible the teachers thought his behavior was. They always say,
I hear ya.
His behavior is socially unacceptable. Oh, really?
Sounds like half the men I've dated, Diane, to his
mother. So. We're used to that.
Let me ask you a question, because you shared this with me, and I did not realize this about you. But sometimes we sense things before they happen, especially, you know, people like yourself, or, you know, all of us have that sixth sense. You felt something was going to happen since you were a small child, right? And I know that sounds weird when I say that.
Yes. I used to drive my parents crazy when I was, you know, barely two, I could speak, asking her what would happen to me if she died. What would happen to me if my dad died? What would happen to me if they both died? What would happen to me if my aunt and uncle died and they died too? And where would I go? I really had this anxiety, and I had this belief that I was going to lose someone who was irreplaceable. And I felt that from the time I was young. I always had more than a normal anxiety over that particular thing. And everyone fears losing someone they love. But it really caused a physical reaction inside of me where I felt that anxiety that I just knew that was coming. And, you know, as I grew older, of course, you learn how to camouflage that. I don't think anyone ever thought I was a neurotic past the age of five or six, maybe. But right. I really had anxiety over that. And the minute Mikey died, I mean, really after the first week, when your body is just absolutely full of anxiety, it's just, you know, numb. It's horrifying. You can't believe this is happening. But when it started really sinking in, I felt, and I always hate to use the word relief, but it was a relief of that anxiety. It was not, certainly not a relief that Mikey was gone, but it was like the inevitable horrible loss finally happened. You know, it was like the loss I had always known was coming finally happened, and I didn't have to dread that anymore. And I completely believe that I knew I would suffer that loss before I came into this world. I truly agree with you. I think we know certain things, that we've planned out with God to as major milestones in our lives. And I believe in free will also. You know, I don't think you plan everything out. I think you're going to have choices, and you're going to exercise your free will as to which direction you go. But ultimately, you're still going to learn the lessons. You just may take a different route to learn them. And that's my belief. And I feel like that was one of those milestones that was kind of etched in concrete, you know, that I was going to suffer that loss. And I think your intuition, your higher self, you have that knowing. You have that knowing feeling when something is up that your higher self knows it's already going to happen, but your conscious brain does not know that. But you have this feeling inside of you that you can't explain. And I truly believe that.
Diane, that is a good point. Okay, so you've had that feeling since you were a small child and that it was going to happen, and now it's happened. You don't have that anxiety anymore. That's it's gone. Let me ask you a question, because you've taken this really personal tragedy, and I've known you for a while, and you've created a book, and you're speaking, and you're doing radio shows, and you're doing other books. But this tragedy here was a diving board for you to figure out your soul's purpose and your life purpose. Is that true or no?
Yes, that is absolutely true. It was a catalyst for me personally to realize, you know, life is short. And is this what I'm here for? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Because I could be gone tomorrow just like Mikey was. I don't think Mikey had any idea, you know, the week before he died that he was going to kill himself. I think that was a compulsive act. He was, you know, prone to compulsive behavior all his life. But I know I could get killed in a car wreck tomorrow. And that really made me start thinking, okay, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? What am I supposed to learn from this? And that's the thing that I always tell people who have lost someone that close to them and they're really struggling with the why me's, the poor me's. Don't ask why me. Ask what am I supposed to be learning from this? Because every painful experience we're given in life is to teach us something. And it happens when we are ready for it to happen. And we may not think we are, but we are. God has said, you're ready to learn this lesson now, and our soul knows that we are ready to learn that lesson now. But people fight it. Instead of embracing it? You know, trying to find the silver lining, and the silver lining is wisdom. That's all we're here for, is to gain wisdom. And so that's what I tell people. Ask, what are you learning? And if you step outside yourself and look at your situation from a third-person perspective, you see the ebbs and flows and the patterns in your life. You'll see repeating patterns, repeating lessons that you've had to get tested on over and over and over, and you will keep getting tested until you get it right. And so that is something that I feel, you know, there's always a lesson in it, and to get out of your grief, get out of your feeling sorry for yourself mode and out of your depression, you've really got to start asking, why is this happening to me as far as a good thing, not a bad thing? What am I supposed to learn that's good that will come out of this? And so that's what I immediately started asking, and which led me to say, you know what? Mikey's got a message here. I've got a message here. Why am I still, you know, working my regular job, working retail job? Am I really fulfilling what my destiny should be? No, I wasn't. I needed to, you know, light a fire under my own butt and start, you know, working towards doing something that my life's purpose was. So it really did start me on that.
So your soul's lesson is to teach to people to have faith, and to learn from the hardships and turn it into something that you can learn from. And that's what you're teaching people to do. And the most difficult things, I think, a parent losing a child is one of the hardest things to go through. It must be, you know, you've taken that tragedy and turned it into your life's purpose, which is to show others how to find their own destiny, to get through it, to learn from it. Is that true? Is that pretty much
that's
it? And you're
true.
Using
and to cope, to cope and to wake up and start feeling happy.
And one day, I have, be happy. You know, that's good.
Yes, yes. To start finding that happiness again and realizing you're still here. Your child may be gone, but there was a reason they're gone, and there's still a reason that you're here. And you need to find that reason. And the reason is never so that you can be a negative influence on everyone else around you. And that's unfortunately what happens often, because everyone is the victim or the martyr, and they want everyone to feel sorry for them. And I never wanted people to feel sorry for me. I wanted to be a positive influence on their life. You know, I wanted to bring them joy. I didn't want to make them sad or depressed. And I still recall seeing Bill Cosby on The Tonight Show several months after he had lost his son, and my son was still quite alive and well at the time. And Bill said, you know, I wanted to come on here because I want to tell people, stop looking at me with that sad face. And I completely understood that. And I talked about that with my daughter, and she said, yes. You know, you see someone who you haven't seen for a couple of years, and all of a sudden they get this, oh, my gosh, recognition. Oh, my gosh, Mikey just died. And they immediately get this sad look on their face. And I did, you know, I didn't want that. I wanted people to see me and smile. I wanted to brighten their day. I didn't want to be a depressant. And I appreciated their compassion and their sadness for me. But you want to be a bright spot in someone's life. You don't want to be a downer. And unfortunately, with death, especially the loss of a child, you encounter people who just can't get out of their own grief. And they're just depressants. And I didn't want to be that person.
Oh, Diane, that's beautiful. And I know that out of Mikey's, Mikey's death and coping with it, and now you're extremely happy. I know you're, you know, building relationships, also romantic relationships. And I'm going to take a little break right now with you, and I want you to help me with this one, because I know you're super psychic, and you're going to say, no, I'm not. And I'm going to say, yes, you are, because I've known you for years now. we've got Alicia. She's on the phone, and she's emailed me before and wants to ask a question about her guy. So you've got a lot of good advice about that too as well. So she'll get to ask both of us today. I think it's about her guy. Alicia, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, Alicia.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. You've emailed and a couple of times. I was like, and it's so funny. I said, I want to talk to her. Just hope she calls tonight. And Diane is a great relationship, in spiritual, intuitive. She's probably psychic, and she's got her own stuff with her relationship. So, what's your question?
Well, actually, I don't know if it's really related to my relationship. In a roundabout way, it is. I am kind of in the position in the family to be the wage earner, and in doing this, I'm failing miserably. I'm trapped living in my mother's home. She's 87, and I have two teenagers, and my husband is retired and into his own thing. He doesn't want to try to generate income other than and what he does with his retirement and Social Security, which isn't doing it. I'm in the red. I'm behind, and I'm chasing my tail, and I sleep on the floor. I don't even have a bedroom. I'm just really putting my – for some reason, I have put myself in a position of really not receiving anything. And I'm tired of it. I've thought in the not so past, I have thought of suicide. Because I've thought anything is going to be better than this.
Wow.
And tomorrow, okay, I'm putting on a big celebration for my son's high school graduation, and I'm working my fingers to the bone. And I'm a massage therapist, and I feel like I have nothing left to give. I don't know.
You want to know, you want to know how to break that cycle, right? And I'm sorry because I got you mixed up with someone else. Please forgive me. But I remember you. I think you called me or we talked.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Diane, I know this is something that you are familiar, not to like this, but what would you say to her, mm-hmm. okay? But she's going to give you some, in the next few minutes after we hang up with you, Diane's going to talk about manifesting and some great things to help you manifest more. But what would you say to her right now, Diane, if you want to get
I would say do the same thing that I did when I was in a position where I was miserable, totally miserable. I was miserable in Oklahoma. I had lost my son and then subsequently lost the man I love. And I just felt isolated. And I wanted to move back to Colorado where my daughter lived, but I saw no way of affording the move. I didn't have another job. And I just woke up one day and I said, I am moving to Colorado. And I'm going to stop looking at the roadblocks. And I'm just going to say, I'm going to get over them somehow. And so instead of putting all of these obstacles out in front of me, like I had been doing, I had been saying, well, I need this much money. I need to find a job that pays this much. You know, I need to be able to pay for this move. And I was putting all these obstacles, and I was focused on those obstacles. When I started saying, I'm just going to get there one way or the other, within 2 weeks, I had a job. And I had a paid-for move with the company. And so that's the first thing I would tell you. Tell yourself, I'm getting out of this. But first you need to be very clear on what you want. Do you want to stay with your husband? You know, you need to get specific in your own mind on what all this entails. Do you want to have your kids come with you? And you need to have that in your mind, you know, I'm going to move with my kids, or I'm going to stay here with my mom and I'm going to find another job where I make more money. You know, you need to be clear first on what you want, and then just set your mind on the fact, just believe it's going to happen for you, because that's what makes things start falling into place. And a lot of the manifesting is also, you know, people talk about manifesting and they feel like it's a philosophical or a spiritual thing. It's also a medical thing. When you tell your subconscious mind to believe something, it takes orders. Your subconscious mind does not make decisions on its own. It takes direct orders from your conscious mind. And that has been proven by doctors. This is this placebo effect, basically. People who go to the healing waters to get healed, if they go there saying, I hope I get healed, they're not going to get healed. If they go there firmly believing they're going to be healed, those are the people who walk away with a healing. And so it really is very crucial that your conscious mind is saying, I'm going to have a better life. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have enough money. I'm not going to be working my fingers to the bone. I'm going to be either with a man I love or without him if he's just bringing me down. And so it's important to be clear in your own mind of what kind of a future you want, and then you have to believe it, because your subconscious mind will work overtime to make that happen for you, and it can either sabotage you if you really don't believe it, or it can help you. And so that's the first thing I would say.
That's really good, and thank you, Diane. So she's given you a little secret there, Alicia, about manifesting. The other thing that I would really advise you to do, because you can have more than what you have, and you don't have to sleep on the floor or anything, be super clear. If you Google the law, not the law of attraction, but the deliberate creation, the law of deliberate creation, that's going to give you a lot of things, okay, or information. And do that when you get off the phone with us. The other thing that, and I'm telling you, the energy is around you to have it all, but you feel so hopeless right now that it's so hard to think past the hopelessness. So if you start there and then get around a group of people, we have a conference call on Tuesday night and it's free. And we talk about manifesting and different aspects of manifesting. And that's something there that you can do. And, you know, I'm creating meditations for people, and I will create a meditation for you if you give me a call tomorrow and we can talk about 5 minutes. I'll put a meditation. This is my gift to you, a free meditation for you that you can, but you got to call me and you need to look up the law of deliberate creation and then write 5 things that you want to create for yourself, because that's going to help me create your meditation. Okay. Five things. And then call me tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You've got my number, so I because you called me before, I believe. Okay, sweetheart. Have a good day, okay?
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Diane, you say that I think you just gave one of the techniques for manifesting that you've used to manifest, but share with us a little bit more, because I know that I'm going to be clear on that and ask a couple questions if you don't mind.
Yes, totally. And you have helped me tremendously. When I first met you, I was in a completely different place than I am now. I was happy with a man, but I was unhappy with the job, and I was missing my daughter. And you kind of saw me go through this whole, the rug coming out from under me with all of my life. I hated my job then, and I changed jobs, lost the guy, and I was just miserable and going, how am I ever going to get out of this and get a life that I wanted? And you helped me by telling me, you know, this is in your energy. I can see you. You're going to get your book published. But it's something that you have to work towards. And that's what people, they need to understand when they call a psychic. This, you know, you're not magically going to win the lottery. This money's not going to fall into your lap. You have to start seeing, it's not just money. It's a means to make the money that you enjoy doing. So it's a career. It's not just this particular man, but it's a man that loves you or a woman that loves you and treats you well. So when you start, you know, believing, yes, this is possible for me, that's the first thing you have to believe, that this is possible for you. And then get it in your head that I'm going to make this happen. You know, I'm not going to sit here and call Tariq and go, well, what day is this, you know, book going to be published? I got out there and I tried to make connections, you know. And we laugh, you know, all the time. Like, you know, the woman who says, I'm waiting for the man of my dreams. When's he going to show up? And Teresa says, well, do you ever get out to meet people? No. Well, I'm waiting for him. I don't want to meet other men. So, you know, you're going to sit in your house and not open the door to anyone, but this man's supposed to magically appear. And that's what people need to understand. You've got to put your energy into that. You've got to focus your energy on that happy future that you want and start working on making that happen yourself.
You are amazing with that, because let me tell you, you know, you and I did a lot of readings, and over the process of a few years, we've gotten to be super good friends. And but one thing I like about you is I'll say, Diane, the energy's here. This is what I see happening. It's there. And once again, it's about choices. So you go out and you make things happen. And out of that, you've created a life where you're living your passion, right? You know, writing books, seminars, and that kind of thing. But the one thing that you said is that you've got to put, you know, it's like praying for something to happen. I like the joke my mom told me years ago. She said, the guy sat on the back row of the church. It was a church, and they wanted the bar beside him to go away. And so they kept praying for it to leave and God to take the bar. And one night the bar burned down. And the guy said, thank you, God. And then there was a guy in the back row, held up a match and said, sometimes you need legs on your prayers, you know. So I don't know. True, right?
That's the truth. That is exactly it, you know. And we make fun of you know, people who, and I love people who have so much faith that they just believe if I pray it's going to magically happen. But I believe that God will help you make it happen when you've got to do some work too. You know, you can't just wait for this, you know, golden nugget to drop out of the sky. But the energy, you know, is out there for you to achieve this, because if it's in your heart, if it's something that you've always felt a calling for or always felt and had a knack for or a talent for, that is something that you were put into this world to do. And that's another thing that I really believe. You know, there's people who say, well, I love to play the piano. I don't have time to play music anymore. I'm working my, you know, accounting job so many hours that I can't play the piano. Well, if you have a talent for playing the piano and that's something you love to do, that is something that you were born to do. That's something that you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
You're not supposed to be doing the accounting work. And if you would start putting that energy into that passion, guess what? You'll probably make more money as a pianist than you would as an accountant, and you'll be doing what you love. So that's another thing that, I tell people, you know, if you feel drawn to something, even if it's a hobby, try to find a way that you can make money off of it, even if it's just a little bit at first, because that's something that you were born to do, and it's when you feel it inside you like that, that's where you're going to find your success. You're going to get your abundance. You're going to find your financial abundance, because that was God's gift to you. That's what you should be doing, and the universe will force you to change, and I've seen that repeatedly with me. When something isn't working for you because it's not the right situation for you, the universe will force you to make that change if you won't make it by yourself.
That is so, so true. I'm going to tell you, I know that without a shadow of a doubt. That's in your, you know, that's when you make your career with love. I know in the career, money should always chase you. You should never chase money, because if you're doing what you're passionate about, or you're loving what you do, and you're doing what you love, the money will come. And you are such a great example of that. And I mean that because you right now, you've been working a job, a full-time job that you don't like, and your dream is to write books on the mountains of Colorado. I'm going to come up there and visit you and meet me a good-looking ski instructor, okay? That's my goal.
That's right. So.
Yeah,
I'll sit in the hot tub and wait for you to get back off the slopes.
Yeah, I'll be in his hot tub too. Okay, after we get all this, like, come back and tell you about it.
I'm a snow bunny.
I leave the beach for that one, okay? Anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, there you go. But you you want to leave your job. And, you know, I know, and anybody out there that's saying, oh, how do I do my passion? I want to share this with the people that are listening. You are getting ready to leave your job, okay, and find something less so you can do more in your passion. Is that true? Can you share with everybody what made you decide to do that? What was your motivation?
I got to Colorado with this job that was a company paid for move. And I was, you know, I got where I wanted, but now I have devoted too much time to this job, and it's taking away from any time that I've had to write other things. And Tari, you and I have been working on a book. I want to spend more time working on that book. And so I realized, you know, I got to practice what I preach here. I'm putting in 75, 80 hours a week to a job where I'm not getting personal reward out of. And I'm not putting time into writing, which is what I love to do. So I finally said, you know what, this is silly. That paycheck, you know, with a certain dollar amount, it's not bringing me happiness. You know, oh, yeah, it's more money, but it's not fulfilling me. And so I'm leaving it, and if I take a job for less money, that's what I need to do, because I will have more money to more time to write, and I will make money off of the stuff that I'm writing, rather than, you know, punching somebody else's time clock. So you have to do that. I've felt, you know, I felt that coming for a while, and, you know, I've been lazy. I get actually overtired from the job, so I'm too tired to look for another job. But I'm making that happen, and it will free me up to do what I'm supposed to be doing.
That is so cool, because I know that, and you're not a bit lazy, because you left Colorado. You and I remember doing a reading with you. I said, Diane, you go, Therese, time for me to leave Colorado. I thought, yeah, it's there. And you just packed your bags, closed everything down. Mm-hmm. You and Sneakers the kitty left for
I left, had the cat left for, and Mikey's ashes in the front seat with me, and I took off.
Yeah, and then you hadn't even, I think you had just found a publisher, or were getting ready to find one, and you just said, okay, I'm going to go with my heart. I need to get back to my roots, which is in Colorado. And that's what you did. And you and I are now writing a book, and to get the total package, you got to be the total package. That's what we're calling it.
Yes, we've messed around. I've got be the total package, attract the total package.
So, yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we wrote it and putting it together. And that's one of the books that you and I are working on. I know you've got another book yourself that you're writing. And what is the book that you're writing about? So another book.
I have actually two more books that I've been working on simultaneously when I have time. One of them is a book with my mom and my daughter that is kind of like a, it's a collection of stories from all of us. You've got three different generations there. And it's about being pigeonholed. And I don't have a title for that just yet. But it's how your family pigeonholes you from an early child, you know, early childhood. I was the crybaby because I was sensitive. And I was all my life, you know, don't tell Diana, she'll cry. Diana's a crybaby. And I felt like I spent my entire life trying to prove to my dad and to, you know, other members of the family that I'm strong. And I feel that people label their kids, you know, you give the people these, you know, nicknames that you think are funny, but they're not funny to the person you're giving them to. And, you know, you'll have the, you know, this is the bully, this is the tightwad, this is the librarian, you know. You make fun of kids when they're little, and you think you've got this pet name you're calling them, but you're really doing them such a disservice because they start viewing themselves like that, and then you feel this, you're driven to prove them wrong. And my mom was the one that they always would say, well, she's like prissy, you know, she doesn't want to get her hands dirty. My mom owned a resort by herself. I mean, she was, you know, single female resort owner in northern Minnesota. And she'd go out there by herself and clean those boats and do the bait house and all this stuff that her mother would have never imagined her doing, you know, because she was getting her hands dirty. And my mom was always a hard worker like that, and she didn't mind getting dirty. But she'd grown up with this, you know, name from her mom, you know, like she's just too prissy to do stuff. She'll just stay in the house. She likes to stay in the house. And it's like you're driven to prove them wrong. So that's the first book. Another book I'm writing is really a relationship book, more of a romantic relationship book. And it's about getting through crises. And a lot of it has to do with your self-worth, which is also one of our key points with our book, Tree. It's finding your own self-worth and not judging your partner. And that's something that people really struggle with. Everybody does. You're always pointing fingers and saying, well, he shouldn't have done that or she shouldn't have said that, and that's why I did this. When we all need to kind of take a step back and own our part of it and own our,
amen to
our
that.
Half of the failures. Yeah. And so that's the other book. And so I've been, you know, writing a little here and writing a little there on all three of these books, and I want to have more time to get them all finished. And so that's what I'm going to do.
Well, you and I worked on it. We're going to New York on, I'm going on Monday, so are you.
Okay.
We're meeting near New York and with publishers and people, and I'm excited. But our book, yeah. Give a little synopsis about what it is, because I'm telling people about excited, because we have to have it out.
And I've had a lot of people who I've talked to who are really excited, and they keep saying, when are you going to get that book out? But it's really looking at yourself and finding your own value and being your best self, being your highest and best self, because that's when you start attracting your highest and best partner, your highest and best job, all these things that we want. We want abundance in our lives. We want the best of everything that we can get. And it starts with your own self-image, your own self-worth. And so that's what we've really keyed on. And what I like about our book is it's not just saying you should think you're a good person or you have to believe in yourself, but it's actually giving people some tools there who are really down in the dumps and struggling to find, you know, something good about themselves, giving people some tools there to work with to start seeing, you know, that self-esteem rising. Because there's so many books right now on manifesting what you want and the law of attraction and everything, but to me, as a reader, I read them and I think, but they didn't really give me any tools. You know, they didn't really tell me, okay, how? When I'm at the bottom of the barrel, yeah, it's easy to tell me to think positive, but I'm not going to think positive. And so that's what our book is really going to help people with.
Yeah, it's the nuts and the bolts. Anyway, and I tell you what, Return of your book, give us the name again, because it's better when you say
Return of Mikey,
and they can
find it on the website, returnofmikey.com, and it's a short, you know, pretty short read. It's not a long novel, and it's not a tearjerker. You really get a feel for Mikey and his spirit, which is always the practical joker. He used to tell us when he was little, if I die before you, I'm going to come back and play tricks on you. And he still is doing it to this day.
That's very good. So they could get the Return of Mikey at that website or your DianeBucci.com. You can get it there.
The author's website, or they can get it on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and it's also available on Kindle Books.
Okay, and if they want a signed autographed copy, anybody that calls from the show, will you do that for them? So can
I
get it?
I absolutely will. Absolutely, yes. I'd love to. I'll give them a free bookmark, too.
Oh, even better. And so we got to close the show, and I know we had a caller we couldn't take, but that's okay. We've got where we can get your books at and the books that are coming out. And for anybody that's listening, if you want a reading, you can go to angelcoaches.com and you can sign up for one. Diane and I are doing a writing workshop on how to write your get your work out there and write your spiritual passion, whatever you're passionate about. She and I are putting that together, and that's going to be in this summer. And we have a Tuesday night call that will teach you how to manifest, and that's at 9:30 East Coast time. And you can go to angelcoaches.org or angelcoaches.com to get the information, and go to facebook.com/angelcoaches and leave us a comment and tell us what you think of the call. All right. Thanks, everybody, and have a great night. Bye, Diane.
Thanks,
we appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.